First of all, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us. I was quite amazed as I was reading through your biography and all the things that you've done for homeopathy. I think you're probably one of the individuals who's contributed more to the homeopathic community in North America than just about anybody. So for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Rowe, let me just give you a quick rundown on all the things that he's done in homeopathy. Dr. Rowe, first of all, is a licensed homeopathic physician who's been practicing homeopathy for 23 years, and he has a full-time practice in homeopathy. He's also a doctor of medicine, graduated in 1984 from Rush Medical School in Chicago, Illinois. He also completed his psychiatric residency at the University of Vermont in 1988 and achieved board certification in psychiatry in 1992. He got his primary homeopathic training at the Homeopathic College of Homeopathy in Albany, California. That's a school that's run by Roger Morrison, Nancy Herrick, and Jonathan Shore. Todd has also done quite a bit of work in terms of publishing, proving, and writing books. He's written a number of titles, including Homeopathic Methodology, The Homeopathic Journey, Choosing a Career in Homeopathic Medicine, and most recently a title, which hopefully he can tell us a little bit more about later on, called The Desert World, A Homeopathic Exploration. Dr. Rowe is also the director of the Society for the Establishment of Research in Classical Homeopathy, and he's conducted numerous provings on local flora and fauna from the Arizona state area. His most recent published book is called The Desert World, and he's also done quite a bit of research exploring the efficacy of homeopathy in the treatment of fibromyalgia through the University of Arizona. Dr. Rowe, for those of you who don't know, is also the past president of the National Center of Homeopathy and did a fantastic job running that organization. And some of the provings he's conducted have been Heloderma spectrum, which is the Gila monster, Carnegia gigantea, which is the saguaro cactus, Urolophus hilari, which is the stingray, Cathartis aura, which is the turkey vulture, Oxalis acetacella, Argamone polyanthemos, I'm probably not pronouncing all these correctly, but bear with me, Salsosa tragus, which is the tumbleweed, alligator Mississippiensis, which is the American alligator, turquoise, which is Geococcyx californicus, and his most recent proving, which is Geocelone saccata, which is the saccata tortoise. So he's done actually quite a bit of work proving, in terms of provings. And most recently, he just published the National Homeopathic Practitioner Survey, which is available from his website, which is, for those of you who are interested, is www.AMC.org. I'll repeat that again, www.AMC.org. Dr. Rowe is also starting a National Homeopathic Patient Survey, which will be completed this later this year, and he's going to be speaking at the American Medical College of Homeopathy fundraising conference this weekend in Phoenix, and specifically focusing on his new work called The Desert World. He'll be telling us a little bit more, I'm sure, about his project, which is the American Medical College of Homeopathy. So, as you can see, Dr. Rowe has done a tremendous amount of work for the homeopathic community in terms of provings, various titles, educational books in homeopathy, and now most recently his desire to create a real medical school of homeopathy in the United States. So with all of that, Dr. Rowe, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a real pleasure. Thank you, Kim.
Well, let's just start. I know you've done so much work in the area of education of homeopathy in North America. I thought maybe it would be useful if you could kind of give us a sense of what your vision is for homeopathic education in this continent.
Okay, so I think from my perception, for a long time, I felt that homeopathic education is kind of at a crossroads in this country. Alternative medicine education in North America has grown substantially in recent years in terms of popularity and growth, but homeopathic education has remained relatively stagnant. I've been a member of NANI, the North American Network of Homeopathic Educators, for some time, and have had a chance to talk to other school leaders. And many of the schools in the United States are struggling to fill their classes. and a significant proportion of graduates from our current schools oftentimes never go on to practice. This has been a concern of mine. And so we've thought about, you know, what's the problem and how can we fix it? And I think the bottom line for me has been that we need a stronger homeopathic profession, that we have a disparate group of practitioners who are either unlicensed or MDs or NDs or nurses or acupuncturists or whatever, and they're all practicing homeopathy. But I also believe that what we need is homeopaths practicing homeopathy, and that we need to begin to create a stronger profession. And so I've thought a lot about how to do that, and one of the thoughts that I had is that we need schools that perhaps are more in-depth and are stronger. And this is what eventually led me to thinking about the creation of a homeopathic medical school.
Mm, very interesting.
Now,
are you finished, Todd, or did you want to go
on? A little more.
Yeah, sure.
Part of the problem also with schools in the United States is that they tend to come and go. There's been a lot of wonderful schools that have done excellent training, but they go for a while, and they're dependent on usually a single administrator or a couple of teachers. And when they stop teaching or stop leading, the schools tend to die out. And I felt as if we need to have a school that's not dependent on a particular person or a group of individuals, but that can be strong enough to sort of leave a legacy for homeopathy's future. And so that was another reason why I thought a medical school would be helpful. Not, again, dependent on a single person, but to create a stronger foundation, if you will, for homeopathic education. And then this is the last comment around this, is that one of the things that we recently did was this National Homeopathic Practitioner Survey. And one of the things that we discovered is that a number of things about the homeopathic community. One is that the average age of practitioners in homeopathy in the country currently is about 47 years old. And that's not a bad thing in itself, but clearly it indicates that homeopathy is generally a second career. And it's been our feeling that we need to begin to attract younger practitioners. There needs to be that new energy. And we've asked, why don't younger people come into homeopathy? Why is it mostly second career? And I think it's because there's a lack of a solid profession and identity as a homeopathic practitioner. So I think I'll stop there.
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I really agree with what you said there. It's absolutely the case. My experience of it has been very much along the lines of what you've been experiencing. I'm curious, Todd, you do offer classes right now, and do you call your school currently the American Medical College of Homeopathy, or is that...
That's correct. We changed our name. It used to be the Desert Institute School of Classical Homeopathy.
Okay.
And we decided as we were moving towards a medical school, which would be a medical school not only for local Arizona, but for the whole country, that we really needed to change our name.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, could you give us a sense of what you're actually doing right now in the school? What kind of programs are you actually offering?
Sure. So we have a part-time program, which has been in existence now for 8 years. We've graduated 4 classes. It's a 900-hour program, part-time program. Pretty similar, I would say, to most of the other programs in the country. We also offer a clinical training program for practitioners who want to fine-tune their clinical skills. We offer clinical training. We offer distance learning programs, which are mostly introductory in nature. We're starting a veterinary program, which we're very excited about. It'll be the first in the country. And we hope that will begin in August of this year. We're just submitting our licensure application for that. And then we also offer postgraduate training, conferences, and preceptorships. We have a lot of medical students and residents that come from the local medical schools, osteopathic schools, naturopathic schools, and do training with us as well.
Very good. Todd, the medical school, you kind of went through a little bit about, you know, why it's important, why we need it. I'm curious why you specifically chose Arizona as the location for such a school.
Well, we looked at all the various states in the country to find where would be the best location. And there was a number of factors. One was that in order to be successful in launching the medical school, we felt that it would be advantageous to have a pre-existing homeopathic licensing board.
Mm-hmm.
The reason for this is that the graduates of our program will be medically trained and will be diagnosing. And we felt that if we have homeopathic practitioners who will be diagnosing patients, that it was important that there be some kind of licensing for those individuals. Secondly, there is an existing homeopathic school in Arizona that is both licensed and accredited, which was important.
And are you talking about the Naturopathic College in Arizona?
No, I'm talking about our school.
Oh, you're talking about your school. Okay.
And we are both licensed and accredited.
Okay.
And when we did our study recently, we looked at practice, homeopathic practitioners, and it turns out that the number one state in the country in terms of homeopathic practitioners is, no surprise, California. And number two, no surprise, is New York State. But what's interesting is that the number three state in the country in terms of number of practitioners and size of homeopathic community was Arizona.
Oh, interesting.
So it's a fairly strong state for alternative medicine. It's kind of a mecca and has the pre-existing licensing board.
Oh, very interesting. So, Todd, can you give us a little bit of a sense of the orientation of the school? Like, what will be, what type of classes you'll be offering? What will the general format be? And just in what is your vision of this? Exactly?
Sure. So, it will be a full-time medical school, and it will be 4,300 hours total. And half of the program will be homeopathic medicine, and the other half will be basic sciences.
Hmm.
There will be 14 departments in the school, which will range from basic medical sciences to materia medica and therapeutics to women's health. There'll be a department of humanism, a department of veterinary medicine, et cetera.
Hmm.
There will be a very strong focus on clinical training. We've always been very aligned with that, feeling that clinical training is best if it begins early on in training, and that it should be a central part of the program. So we will certainly be continuing that effort as part of the medical school. We're going to have a very strong grounded basis in classical fundamentals of homeopathy. We've had a lot of discussion about this. And so we're going to be teaching a lot of Organon in the beginning of the program. Our program is going to be classically focused.
Hmm.
And we will be offering a class at the end of the school in other approaches to homeopathic medicine, because we feel like our students should have knowledge about other forms of alternative medicine and homeopathy, but our focus is going to be classical.
Hmm.
We're also going to be offering a fair amount of training in marketing and in business skills. This has been one of the weaknesses we feel in the homeopathic education community to date. And so we're going to be offering a lot of focus on that. Another strong focus of our program is going to be humanism. And that involves developing self-care skills and teaching homeopathic practitioners how to take better care of themselves, which is oftentimes neglected, as well as developing skills in becoming a healer. There's going to be some training in integrative medicine, so we're offering survey courses and things like oriental medicine, herbal medicine, those kinds of things, but no in-depth kind of training. We're going to be having classes in things like, which we're kind of excited about, developing the capacity to observe, developing the capacity to perceive, classes in removing obstacles to cure, those kinds of things.
Hmm.
We're also going to be offering elective time in the fourth year, which would be fairly substantial. And one of the things that we've been working with is schools outside of this country who will be willing to accept our students either in an exchange or simply to visit and do training. And our hope is that our students can see more severe pathology, which is not possible here in the United States. So visiting, for example, homeopathic hospitals around the world, I think would be a valuable experience for our students at a certain point. We're going to have two tracks. Three tracks, actually. The first will be the whole program. The second track will be the homeopathic portion only, where someone can come, for example, who's had a fair amount of medical training already and licensed, and just do the homeopathic portion. We're also going to have a track which will just be the medical portion. So graduates from homeopathic schools around the country, if they want to do the medical portion, are welcome to come and get further training in the medical part. And then the last thing to say is that we have three core values for the program, and those are humanism, which I already mentioned, community, and the third is research. So we're going to be, we're asking all of our departments to incorporate those three core values into all the work they do.
Very interesting. Toddy, approximately how many hours would you say the homeopathy part would be?
Be 2150.
2150 hours.
Yep.
Okay, and that's
which is substantial.
Yeah, that is fairly large. I mean, I think that's quite a bit more than any current school is offering.
That's correct. I think probably the longest program in the country, I'm not certain, would probably be the Minneapolis program, which I think is around 1,200 to 1,400 hours right now.
So this is close to double that amount.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's, you know, I've always felt that this is a, really an essential component to creating really qualified practitioners. It's the necessary study time. So I'm glad that somebody's moving ahead in this direction. Somebody graduates through the school and they go through the 4 years, they go through the medical program. What's the scope of their practice, and what degree do they get offered from the American Medical College of Homeopathy?
Okay. So it's a doctoral program, and our plan is to offer a doctoral degree, and so our graduates will be entitled to be called doctor. We are not certain about the exact title yet. The proposal is Doctor of Homeopathy. It's possible that it will be Doctor of Classical Homeopathy, and ultimately that decision will be determined by the legislature and the Homeopathic Licensing Board here in the state.
Mm.
The practice will be limited to homeopathic medicine and will not include prescribing conventional drugs.
Mm.
That is something that potentially may change for the future, and that'll have to be heavily debated and discussed. There's certainly a lot of pros and cons to that.
Mm.
The naturopathic profession did go that route, but what they did was they started without that and then only added that. For example, the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine recently added prescribing conventional drugs in the last couple of years. But certainly our program is not planning on doing that initially.
Mm. Todd, how will the teachers actually get selected in the courses? I mean, is there like a governing body that makes these decisions? How does that actually work?
So we're a nonprofit school, and we have a board of directors, which is a 9-member board. We also have, my current position is president of the school. We also will be having a dean of academic affairs who will be overseeing much of the actual faculty selection and faculty day-to-day kinds of issues. Ultimately, we're going to need about 60 to 70 faculty for the school. Currently, we have about 45 to 50 that we've selected, but we certainly need more. One of the problems in terms of the faculty is that, unlike most of the schools currently in this country, it's somewhat difficult to teach in our new program from a distance. Many of our classes will be Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and maybe 1 hour a week kind of thing. So it's not the kind of thing that you can fly in for 3 days and teach and then fly out. So as we move forward, more and more of our faculty will most likely be local, although there will always be room for some distance faculty as well. Another thing that we will be doing is doing some distance learning teaching so that faculty can teach out of their home via the Internet. We don't want to do a substantial portion of our curriculum that way, but we think that that is valuable and allows us to bring in, you know, masters of homeopathy from around the world into the classroom so that students can be exposed to them.
Mm-hmm. Todd, I know, I know you're very aware of this, and probably most of you on the call are aware of this, but, you know, there's obviously many differences of opinion in North America and even around the whole world today in terms of how homeopathy should be practiced. And there's lots of different positions and points of view. How have you addressed that particular issue in creating your curriculum?
Good. So our viewpoint is to be inclusive rather than exclusive. And that means that we're trying to be broad in our approach to homeopathy. Now, what that does not mean is that we are going to omit the sort of grounded fundamentals of classical homeopathy. So we're very much keyed in that our students need to have a strong foundational training in homeopathic medicine. But we are also believe that our students have to practice in the world, and so they have to be aware of other types of homeopathy, other ways of practicing homeopathy. Generally, we encourage diversity amongst our students and amongst our faculty, as long as they share that same common ground of classical homeopathy. We encourage diversity because we feel that even though it creates some dissonance in terms of the thinking of our students, which makes it harder sometimes, ultimately it makes a better practitioner. Our goal is not so much to teach students what to think, but to think for themselves. And by creating diversity of opinions, we feel that our students can then better make an informed decision about how ultimately they want to practice. So, for example, one of the things we will be doing in the third and fourth year of the program is that we will be having grand rounds. And in the grand rounds, we will be having teachers come and speaking from diverse viewpoints about homeopathy and the practice of homeopathy. And it will serve as, hopefully, a place for debate and discussion that will lead to more richer and more deeper understanding of how homeopathy is understood and practiced around the world. So we're coming mostly from a place of diversity. I think if I can describe it in any one way, that would be that.
Thanks. Todd, I know that you've got this new veterinary program that you've just recently established, and I know there's quite a bit of interest in veterinary homeopathy, especially in North America. Can you give us a little bit of an idea what your program's about, who's going to be teaching it, what the basic focus is?
Great, yeah. So one of our perceptions is that the homeopathic veterinary community has been sort of gradually moving forward. I think the AVH has been doing a wonderful job of growing veterinary homeopathy, but that the education and veterinary homeopathy has been somewhat stagnant in the sense that mostly it's been seminar-based, and I think Richard Pitcairn has done a wonderful job in his teaching, but still it has been, again, seminar-based, and there's been no clinical aspect to the training to date. And so we met with Richard to discuss what we were doing at the medical school, and he became really excited about the possibility of expanding the veterinary education in homeopathy, moving beyond a seminar base to the level of a part-time program. And so what we're looking at is a program that will be fairly similar to other programs in the country for human-based homeopathic practice. It'll be a 500-hour program to start, which will be 3 days a month for 2 years, and will encompass clinical training, about one-third training. Richard has agreed to be the program director and the chair of our veterinary department. And he has helped us find 8 veterinary faculty from around the country who will be teaching in the program. And again, our hope is to be able to start the program in August, although it's possible we'll have to delay until February of next year, depending on licensure issues. We are planning, again, 2 tracks for this, and one will be for licensed veterinarians, and the other track will be for unlicensed practitioners, the general public who wants to learn about the practice of veterinary homeopathy. And we're very excited about the program.
It's going to be actually separate from the human medical school of homeopathy, is that right? I
mean, that's correct, yes.
Separate thing altogether.
Yes.
In other words, you can't go to the human school and start taking the veterinary courses, is that right?
That's correct, you can't.
Okay.
One of the things that we believe in is training at different levels. So even though we're developing the medical school, we also believe in training to other levels, like the part-time level and the acute care level and even a sort of a very basic first aid casual level. So we are going to be continuing to educate at all those levels, even though we're adding the full-time doctoral program as well.
very interesting. Aside from the veterinary program, Todd, is there? I know that you're doing some other programs as well. Could you give us kind of a rundown on what else the American Medical College of Homeopathy is planning to do?
Sure. So one of the wonderful things about having a medical school in the country is that it begins to make a lot of things that were impossible before in the homeopathic community possible. So one of those is research. And we are going to be forming a homeopathic research institute, which will have its own home, its own building, separate from the medical school. And we've identified five areas of research that we'll be focusing on. One is clinical, doing studies. We've been doing some studies for the University of Arizona that have been sponsored by NIH, and we want to continue that work, mostly with Iris Bell, who is our research director, but also continuing our proving research, homeopathic research, basic science research, looking at what is the mechanism of homeopathy and explaining it and that kind of thing. And then practice-based research, which focuses, for example, the National Homeopathic Practitioner Survey, and also the other survey is just starting, the National Patient Survey. We're beginning to look at what is the nature of practice of homeopathy in the United States. One of the things that we really wanted to do was to demonstrate the cost-effectiveness of homeopathic medicine. And I think that there are research projects that we'll be embarking on, which hopefully will begin to look at this. And then the last area of research that we want to talk about is educational research. No one has really done much work in this area in homeopathy, asking questions about what is the best way to teach homeopathy and to educate in homeopathy, and are there better or worse ways to do that? So research in that area. Another thing that we'll be adding is a museum, which will be part of our eventual campus. What we're looking at is about 5 acres of land, which will have a number of buildings. You can actually see the campus on our website. And one piece will be the museum. We're very excited about it. It will be a historical piece, but the primary purpose of the museum is not historical. It is public information. It's using homeopathy as a bridge to, or providing a bridge to homeopathy for the public, of explaining what it is and how it works and getting people excited about homeopathy. Another major feature will be a library, and we're planning a couple of things with this. Right now, we have about 3,000 volumes in our library, which is one of the larger homeopathic libraries in the country. And we have been accepting donations, and books keep coming in. And our goal is to develop the first comprehensive homeopathic library in the United States, which essentially will mean every book that's been written about homeopathy in the English language. And so if we can achieve that goal, which I think is actually doable, it will become a research library and a source for all the schools in the country and anyone who wants to use it to do research in homeopathy. Mm-hmm. So we're excited about that. We're also partnering with several of the other medical schools in the area to create a CAM library, which will be one of the first of its kind in the country, which will have a wing for homeopathy, a wing for oriental medicine, a wing for naturopathic medicine, etc., and bringing them all together and providing a large library where people can come and study alternative medicine. So that's been something we've been working on, moving forward with.
Sounds very exciting.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces that are going to be coming along with the medical school, which we're excited about.
So I'm interested, so this library, you're going to try to get together every English journal, that's quite
quite an undertaking, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, some of those journals, I don't know if you're in touch with Phil Kurtzos or,
I have been, yes.
Yeah, I mean, some of those are rather costly items. I mean, I guess you're going to have to get a lot of donations.
We are, yes, and it's one of our goals, yes.
Yeah, yep. I think it's a very worthwhile project, preserving that golden legacy of homeopathy, so.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great project.
And the same thing with the museum, is preserving the legacy. We'll certainly have artifacts, and we'll be accepting artifacts to museums for display, too.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that'd be wonderful. I mean, I think that's just an attraction on its own, even if somebody doesn't
necessarily
get involved in the school.
Yep. And then one other thing just to mention that goes along with all this is that we want to create a conference center, a seminar and conference center, that organizations or whoever wants to use for homeopathy and that will be part of our campus ultimately as well.
Interesting. You know, since you mentioned this idea of doing conferences and actually just the school in general, I know that, you know, it's human nature that some of the existing schools out there may perceive this as a potential threat to their existence. You know, especially as you mentioned, a lot of the schools have a lower attendance than they've had in previous years. I'm curious if you could maybe just address that issue and maybe talk a little about how the college will be a benefit to the community.
Yeah, good. That's been a big issue for us, is not wanting to harm or hurt in any way any other homeopathic program. The first thing to say is that I think the kinds of students that will be attracted to the medical school will be very different than the kinds of students that are attracted to existing homeopathic programs in the country. The demographics that we will be marketing will be substantially different. So mostly we are going to be marketing to new grads right out of college. So a younger audience than existing homeopathic schools, which are mostly second career focused. Mm. And so if that's true and we're successful with that, there will be not so much competition. Secondly, we hope to be able to offer a lot of resources to other schools around the country that they may not have. For example, research. There's not a lot of research going on in homeopathy in the United States, and we can offer, because of our size and the research institute, a research portions of curriculum if schools want around the country. Similarly, we'll have a lot of clinical faculty as part of the program, and one of the problems with some schools that I've talked to around the country is that they've had trouble finding clinical supervisors, clinical mentors, those kinds of things. And so we may be able to offer those kinds of services to various schools. Another thing that we're going to be offering, which we're just going to be starting next year, is teacher training. And we're excited about this. We are required, because we're accredited, to do annual faculty training in education. And one of the problems in homeopathic education is that no one ever really teaches the teachers how to teach. It's kind of just sort of comes to the territory. And just because you're a good practitioner doesn't necessarily mean you're a good teacher. And so one of the services we'll be offering to the community is an opportunity to train in homeopathic education and expand your skills in education. So those kinds of things. And there's a lot of other things that we have in mind, which can hopefully benefit other programs and other schools as we move forward. But our goal is not to be competitive, bottom line.
Yeah, I think it's it would be important, I guess, to get that communication out, because I can imagine, I mean, I hear what you're saying for sure, but I can certainly imagine that some schools, you know, might feel a little threatened.
Yes.
Just as a gut reaction to the fact that there's going to be this much larger program available. But yeah, it sounds like you've really considered all that pretty thoroughly. You had mentioned that you've got 45 of the 60 basically core faculty. Is there some place that people could actually see who these people are so far?
Yes, again, that's on our website.
So that's all already on your website. Could you repeat the website just so everybody has that information? They can go visit it for themselves.
Yes, just www.amcofh.org.
Okay, it doesn't matter if it's a capitalized or lowercase?
It doesn't matter, no.
Okay, so just the way I
get it. Now, unfortunately, there's a lot of material about the medical school that's not on the website yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're still not licensed. We've submitted our licensure application, but it takes a long time to go through. Mm-hmm. And we're not allowed to put a lot of material. For example, our catalog is done and our curriculum is done, but we're not allowed to publish that yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's actually on there, but it's been suppressed, and hopefully that'll be up in about the next 6 months.
So you feel that the school will get the accreditation within the next 6 months?
The licensure, yes, correct.
The licensure, yeah. And I know that, you know, a project like this requires massive amounts of funds. How's that going?
Yeah. So we need help. Bottom line is that we feel this is a project for the entire homeopathic community. And there's a number of ways that people can help. One is that we're looking for volunteers, and those are people who have some expertise, for example, in marketing or in fundraising or legislatively or whatever. We have about 25 committees that are currently working on this project, and we have over 60 volunteers currently, but we certainly need a lot more assistance. Another way people can get involved is becoming faculty, and we certainly welcome faculty applicants. We require them to have at least 5 years of practice in homeopathy and to be certified in the homeopathic community.
Does that mean Council for Homeopathic Certification?
Something like that, correct.
Yeah, okay.
And then, you know, just to submit an application. We are looking for donations, and those donations can be monetary. They could also be books or potential artifacts for our museum. In terms of money, any amount would be we gratefully can use. We also have sponsorships, so individuals who want to donate more or corporations can become sponsors. The minimum level is $5,000, and that can be spread out over a number of years, and then larger sponsorships. And there's benefits for sponsorship for the program as well. We have a Build a Brick campaign.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of those benefits, just for people...
For sponsorships?
Yeah, just because people might be listening to this later on and might want to know.
Yeah. Mostly what that is naming opportunities. Mm-hmm. Depending on the size of the sponsorship, there are it can be naming for example, a very large sponsorship could be a naming of a wing or a building even on the campus. Or it may be a naming of a fund for a smaller sponsorship. Sponsors become automatic sponsors of all of our events. They go on our website. We use their logo on our press releases, all that kind of stuff as a sponsor to get their name and their word out, if you will. They automatically become a conference sponsor of all the conferences we do as we go around. Things like that. There's, again, I think a list on the website of all the various sponsorship benefits.
Okay, great.
Another one is a Build a Brick campaign, and this is fairly simple. You can buy a brick, which means putting your name or your organization, which will be going close to the entrance. We don't quite know what it's going to look like, but definitely it'll be on a brick or possibly a leaf at the center of the campus, people who've donated. And we have two ways of donating. You can be an individual donor for $125, and I think a family or a corporate one for $250. Another way of donating is legacy, and that is to leave a portion of your estate or will to the American Medical College of Homeopathy. So we have a Leave a Legacy campaign. Another way of participating is through your patients, the practitioners. So we have a brochure, which we'd be happy to mail to you in your offices and that you can leave out. And then patients can look at, it's called Growing Homeopathy, and encourages them to donate to the medical school and to leave a legacy for the future of homeopathy. Then the last thing is attending our annual conference. So we have a fundraising conference once a year. The speakers donate their time, so all the proceeds from the conference go to the American Medical College of Homeopathy. We also have a fundraising dinner as well. So attending that conference is another way of giving to the school.
Hmm. Todd, do you guys have a location already for the school?
It's going to be in the Phoenix area. We are in discussion right now with Gateway Community College, which is a community college that has some extra land near the downtown of Phoenix. We're really excited about this because it does two things. One is it makes us very central, which we thought there's no way we could afford in terms of land. And secondly, it raises our status to being connected with an existing accrediting institution that's quite large. It's they have a student population of about 15,000. And they have all sorts of services that they could make available to us, which are already in existence, which will help us get started. So that's a possibility. I don't know if that's going to come through or not, but we're looking at that. We're also looking in the northwest sector of Phoenix, possibly, where a lot of the current schools are being built, which would be a little farther out.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys planning on doing classes or conferences outside of the state of Arizona, or is mostly everything going to be happening inside the state?
one of our perceptions is that there's a lot of great conferences going on out there. And we didn't, again, want to be competitive. And we thought people were doing a good job. So we definitely are going to be doing postgraduate training locally. But we thought that the homeopathic community was doing a good enough job with conferences that we didn't really need to add something to the mix. On the other hand, we are interested in doing some conferences that are a little different than the average run-of-the-mill conferences. So, for example, we were thinking of putting on a veterinary conference, a research conference, some kinds of specialty, perhaps even a pharmacy conference, some kinds of specialty conferences periodically that may be a little more esoteric that no one is really considering and doing out there, but may be of benefit to the homeopathic community. Similarly, with our distance learning programs, we're not going to be offering a expansive full-time kind of distance learning program, but we will be expanding our distance learning offerings to include offerings that are not so much offered in the community right now. So, for example, a pharmacy course for those who want to study and learn more about homeopathic pharmacy, or homeopathic research course, or perhaps a homeopathic veterinary course that people can learn the basics of homeopathic veterinary medicine online. Mostly our distance learning focus is on introductory level, and we don't really have any plans of expanding beyond an introductory level.
Mm-hmm. Todd, I know the title of this call is The Future of Education in Homeopathy, but I did want to ask you just quickly about your most recent book, Desert World. Could you tell us a little bit about what the book is about and what you what you achieved in this publication?
Great. So I moved to Arizona in, I guess it was 88, and I've always loved the desert. I've always been kind of a desert rat, and it was one of the reasons why I came out here, and I really have fell in love, and it's really, I think, one of the places that I feel most at home. And kind of like William Borecki, I've had a real interest in doing research about local flora and fauna. There's a macrobiotic theory in and alternative medicine in general that patients oftentimes do best with medicines that come from their own backyard. And I've always had a little interest in that idea. And so it's kind of led me to doing some research, proving research mostly, based on local indigenous flora and fauna. And you read some of the things that we've done and enjoyed. As we've done that research, We inevitably have started thinking about, well, is there any comparison between these various remedies? You know, are these all standalone remedies and should be treated separately? Or is there any ways of thinking about common themes? You know, I know it's a controversial area in homeopathy, the idea of themes, but it certainly is one that is getting to be more accepted and is one that I've always been interested in myself. Mostly research and themes and families has been more biologically focused. So, for example, the family of snakes or the family of Ranunculaceae or something like that. And, you know, the question is, what are the themes of those various families? Well, our interest in research has been on, are there indeed themes for biomes, an environmental approach to understanding families? So, for example, Massimo Mamsevari and to some extent Divya Chhabra have done work on the ocean biome and looking at themes of various remedies that come from the ocean and what characteristics those people who need ocean remedies have. So what we've been looking at is the desert biome and trying to develop a series of themes that seem to hold true for various desert medicines that came out in our provings, but also that we've seen substantiated over and over again in cured desert cases over time. So that's really what the book is about. It presents the natural history of the desert and this idea of biome research, and then goes into the various themes that we've come up with and then tries to substantiate them through all the provings that we've done, as well as the materia medica of all the other homeopathic medicines that are in existence. And one of the things that we did was we identified which homeopathic medicines from the materia medica seemed to fall into the desert biome, and ultimately we came up with a list of about 50 different medicines that seemed to fit.
So, I'm sorry, Ted.
Yep, that's all.
No, I think it's interesting, and I think maybe for some people this might be a new concept, but basically what you're saying is that even a cactus and a tortoise and a grain of sand from the desert, even though those are obviously taxonomically not related in any way whatsoever, they might share certain medicinal properties because they all come from the desert.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, very interesting. So my last question is, when do you sleep?
My wife asked me that many times.
Okay. You know, I don't expect you to answer that question.
Well, I can say a little bit. Say a little bit, and that is one of the most wonderful things in life, I think, is to be able to follow your passion, is to be able to follow your dream. And I have had this dream of creating this homeopathic medical school for ages. I never really acted on it because I didn't think the homeopathic community was ready for it. But I've always had this in my heart. And to actually be able to materialize it, or at least to play a part in that materialization, is just such a wonderful thing that I think it sustains me. Because it's a very difficult process. For a medical school, it's not easy. There's so much hurdles, you know, and paperwork and documents. I think I was just looking at my files the other day, and I created at least 20,000 documents relating to the homeopathic medical school so far. So it's this huge undertaking, and yet I think what sustains the people that are working on this is just this love of this project and this vision of what perhaps homeopathy could become, and this idea of leaving a legacy for the future of homeopathy and creating a stronger foundation. So I think that's what keeps me going.
You know, a great man once said that the measure of our lives is not what we take from life, but what we give back to it. And certainly you have fulfilled that that great wisdom in life.
Thank you.
So I'm going to go ahead now and open it up to the general audience, and people can ask questions directly for Dr. Rowe. Hold on one second. So does anybody have any questions for Dr. Rowe?
I do.
Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Rowe. This is Medini. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Medini.
when are your first students going to apply to this? When are they going to turn in their application for this four-year program?
So our original intent was to open the first class February of 2009, which means 2 years from now. And that's still our goal. There's a possibility, depending on licensure and accreditation issues, that we may have to delay until February of 2010. But as things stand right now, it'll be February 2009. And in terms of application, I would expect that we'll be opening the application process probably 1 year in advance. So possibly February of 2008, if we're on track for February 2009.
And do you have an idea what this tuition is going to cost?
So a couple of things. First of all, our student class size will probably be about 50 students per class, and our total student body will probably be about 200. In terms of tuition, that is not fixed in stone. What we're looking at right now is probably a tuition of about $20,000 a year. And the reason I'm saying that is that naturopathic schools are typically on the order of about $23,000. And if you look at Oriental medicine schools, which are more at a master's level of training, are typically more around $16,000, $17,000 on average. And medical schools out there varied with depending whether it's state or not, but are usually on the order of $25,000, $26,000. So we're going to be somewhere in that range, but probably on the lower side to start. So we're thinking somewhere around $20,000 a year.
Okay. Thank you. Are you going to have like anything like a hospital with this school?
Yes. That's something we talked a lot about. What we're embarking on is quite huge. And the idea of a homeopathic hospital is even huger, if you will. And we strongly believe that that needs to be an eventual piece. And so it's part of our long-term vision. But we feel that we have to get the medical school and the medical center, we're going to be having a medical center as part of the medical school, going first. We'll be having a lot of clinics and that kind of thing. And probably the hospital, which is sort of one of the last bastions of allopathic medicine, won't be coming along the line until 15 years down the line. Maybe sooner, depending on how things go. But that was sort of our vision. We looked and we talked to a lot of other homeopathic medical schools around the world. And, for example, in India, all of the homeopathic medical schools are required to have a hospital there on the premises. And so it is a long-term goal of ours, but realistically, and then how much we can do and how much we can fundraise initially, we are going to delay that for a while.
Okay, thank you. And one final question. I know about this. I heard about this because of my connection with you. I want everybody to hear about this. I mean, is the word out there? This NCH conference that's coming up in April, are they going to spread the word? And even overseas, even around the world, it seems like people would want to see an American College of Homeopathy on the scale that you are talking about.
We did present this idea at the NCH conference last year. Unfortunately, Dana decided not to let us speak about the issue this year in Colorado. But we will try again next year at the NCH conference on the East Coast. We will have a booth at the NCH conference, so people are welcome to come by. I also have been speaking at various conferences about the issue as time has gone on. And the word is gradually spreading. I think more people are becoming aware of the project. But we need help, and that's one of the things that we need volunteers for, is helping us to spread the word.
Okay. Thank you.
I had another question. I know the laws are different for homeopathy in different states. The graduates of the school, what will be their legal rights in terms of practicing homeopathy depending on the state they live in?
So it's a complex question. It depends entirely on the state. Initially, like with the oriental medicine profession, the chiropractic profession, they started with a single state. They started with licensure in a single state, and that's what we're going to be doing in Arizona. We do fully support freedom legislation, and that's been probably the major criticism I've heard about the medical school project has been concern from individuals who espouse freedom legislation that licensure may interfere with the ability to freedom legislation. And we've had a lot of discussions around this and have talked to Nash about this. And it's our belief that it's possible to have both freedom legislation and licensure, that they are not mutually exclusive. And so, for example, Ontario is adopting this model of unlicensed practice, as well as for those who want to diagnose and get further medical training, a licensed form of practice. And so you can have perhaps both side by side. And that is our model that we want to adopt eventually. So in terms of licensure, what we plan on doing is going state by state. And we'll be starting probably with Nevada and Connecticut, because those are states that already have a licensing board, and then just moving gradually out there. For example, the naturopaths currently have 13 states where there is licensure. But naturopaths practice in other states as well, and sometimes more successfully, sometimes less successfully. So we'll be in the same boat, essentially.
John, I have a question. Cyrus here. How essential is it that the Arizona Homeopathic Medical Board be firm in its position, or rather not being politically challenged, in order that the school be successful?
Well, our graduates will be licensed through the Homeopathic Licensing Board, so the existence of the Homeopathic Licensing Board will be fairly critical in terms of the success of the school.
Okay.
We have time for perhaps one or two more questions, so this is your golden opportunity to ask Dr. Rowe.
I have a question, Dr. Rowe. This is John Burns in San Francisco. I'm a homeopath without a medical background, and I'm interested in potentially going to your school for the medical science component. And I guess one of the questions that has been asked is, to what extent, and this is a large question, I understand, but to what extent in your mind and in other people's mind is expertise in biomedicine in terms of making a homeopathic practitioner?
It's a big question.
Big question. But it seems all essential, doesn't it?
I think that there are various ways of practicing homeopathic medicine. I think some of the most outstanding homeopathic practitioners in the world today have not had medical training or not licensed, you know. So I think that there's a lot of good that can be done in homeopathic practice. And I fully support unlicensed practice. However, there also is a lot more that can be done, I believe, with fundamental medical research. Even though I define myself as a homeopath, I use my medical skills in my practice every day. And so I think that there are some strong advantages to having medical training. So I would like to see a world where, again, both are possible, that it's possible to have unlicensed practice without medical knowledge and to have practice which includes and encompasses a firm foundation in medical knowledge. So I believe that there's room for both, ultimately.
And do you, the types of training that somebody would get at this college doesn't enable that person to practice medicine per se in other states, but it would allow them what exactly? That's what I'm trying to understand.
It would allow them to call themselves a doctor,
mm-hmm.
Okay, because they will have a degree and enables them to do that. And as we move out into other states, which is our intention, there will be licensing possibilities in other states as well.
And would they, for instance, at the school, get the training to do a physical examination, to be able to read and understand laboratory results, these kinds of things?
Yes, definitely. Understanding of allopathic medication. All those kinds of things will be fundamentals that will be learned within the medical school. I think the best analogy would be about the same level of medical training as a naturopathic school.
Okay.
To give you
a
sense of what level, yeah.
Great. Well, I see that we're out of time. I want to just personally thank you, Dr. Rowe, for joining us and really providing us a wonderful insight into the work that you're doing and this wonderful vision of a homeopathic medical college. I want to remind everybody that you can get more information about the school by visiting their website at www.amcoh.org. That's www, is that correct?
That's right, AMC of H.
Yeah, amcofh.org. So you might want to go check it out. It sounds like there's a lot of wonderful information. I'm going to go check it out this evening myself. And again, I want to thank you, Dr. Rowe. Can everybody give Dr. Rowe a big thank you?